Hello and welcome to the Politically Speaking Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Chris McDaniel, a political reporter for St. Louis Public Radio. And joining me today,
Jason Rosenbaum of the St. Louis Beacon.
And Joe Manis of the St. Louis Beacon.
Before we get into anything else, we have some business to take care of. Joe is not just Joe Manis. She is the award-winning Joe Manis. She received a Lifetime Achievement Award on Friday. And I can think of no one who is more deserving than Joe.
Well, that's very sweet of you. I'm shocked that you – seriously, because many people deserved it. This was given by the St. Louis Media Guild, and I was very surprised and very honored. Been a lot of – a couple previous big people who got the award, including Bill McClellan at the Post-Dispatch and Joe Pollack, who used to work for the Post-Dispatch and for St. Louis Public Radio.
Well, she is among some greats up there, and it – is most definitely an honor.
Absolutely.
So let's get right down to the politics of it. Monday, the State of the State happened with Governor Jay Nixon. Joe, did you go down to the state capitol for it?
No, we watched it online, which sounds like we were just kind of not. But frankly, the last couple of years, it's turned out, I think, for it to be better for us to monitor it online and then get emailed. And I actually got involved in the briefings, thanks to some cooperative state officials who had me on the phone, stuck on the side while they were briefing other reporters. So actually, it worked out well because it tends to get a little crowded in that House chamber, and logistically, it can be difficult. And we wanted to get something up right away. So,
and I wasn't there either because I'm just lazy.
No. And he was charged with doing Speaker Tim Jones, and Jason did quite well. But I think the main thing is the State of the State address is where the governor traditionally lays out his budget. And this year he did so. And it was somewhat good news for the compared to the previous years. The state is expecting to see its income go up actually close to over 4%, but after taking some subtracting the lack of some federal funds and some federal tax changes, the bottom line is the state expects its income to be up just a little over 3% for FY 2014, which begins July 1st. But for our listeners, the key point is the bottom line is they expect to have a few hundred million of extra money. I'm putting quotes around that, because this is after several years of massive budget cuts. So the governor was proposing to use some of it to beef up spending for education. And that was, I think, his chief focus as far as where the extra money would go.
How much more money was that off the top of my head?
It was about $150 million. Mm-hmm. And then there was a few other million here and there for some other programs. He's particularly focusing on early childhood programs, which frankly have often been a key focus of governors, Republican and Democrat. Going back to when Kip Bond was governor, he had proposed some extra spending for early childhood education. And the governor is also talking about some more money to put in the foundation formula, which is the technical name for the basic aid program that goes to public schools from K through 12. And then he was proposing a little over $30 million for money to higher ed. Now, again, all of these entities have taken some hits the last few years in seeing their scheduled allocations lower because of the state's economic problems and because education is a large block of the state, general state spending. So you have some critics who are saying, well, he's just proposing to give back what they had to take away a few years before. Now, but a lot of this hinges on another key part that he did not bring up at the beginning of his speech. He kind of edged into it. I would argue that his key
was he burying the lead, so to speak.
Oh. Yes, yeah, that's a journalism term. And yeah, he talked about all sorts of other things, and then he finally got down to the nitty gritty, the elephant in the room, so to speak, for all those elephants in the in the audience. Was his reaffirming that he supports the Medicaid expansion. And which most of those legislators in the room were Republicans and who do not. But he was also trying to make the economic case that, A, according to their calculations, that the state, with the federal money coming in and everything else, the state actually gains, aside from the feds picking up the costs, $47 million because there's some federal money that's going to go away that's supposed to be replaced with some Medicaid expansion money. And if they don't do the expansion, the state loses that federal money anyway. So the bottom line is they're saying, look, if we do this, aside from the federal money for Medicaid, we also end up with an additional $47 million. And he also was pointing out that many business groups, and he had a bunch of those business representatives there in the audience, which I thought was interesting, had him stand up to kind of remind those Republicans, in effect, these are your donors who support the Medicaid expansion, because there is a number of business groups that haven't been up front on it, but I think the governor is trying to pressure them to get a little more up front on it, that they support the Medicaid expansion. And what he's saying is, look, this is a business decision. And many of these people standing up didn't even support the president. But this is the law, and we need to be doing it.
So, and then after that, as always is the case, House Speaker Tim Jones of Eureka gave the Republican response. I believe he and Senate Appropriations Chairman Kurt Schaefer gave it last year as kind of a duo. But he did it himself. And he basically he ran over a lot of his triple E agenda, which I think we talked about in an earlier podcast, education, economic development, energy. And Mr. Speaker, if I got any of those E's wrong, please reprimand me on Twitter. But he also gave a pretty thorough beatdown, so to speak, of the idea that the Republicans wanted the Medicaid expansion. Now, obviously that could change, especially if conditions change, but the Republican opposition to this is nothing new, and him expressing opposition and saying that it was an overgrown Washington monster ready to eat the Missouri budget was not new rhetoric either. So,
yeah, one of Nixon's sticking points was that, you know, if the federal government doesn't hold up its end of the bargain in, you know, keeping a steady flow of money for this Medicaid expansion, then Missouri doesn't have to do it. We can roll back on it. But that argument doesn't seem like it's going to be swaying any Republicans.
But I thought it was the first time the governor has said that publicly before, you know, a strong audience of critics saying, look, if they don't follow through with the money, we'll cut it off.
Yeah, and that could be kind of a counter argument to the people that say we can't trust the federal government to hold up their end of the bargain. So I think that might be trying to rebut that aspect to it. It's been kind of a slow process, like with the proponents of this. They're trying to A, say it would provide economic development, B, trying to say it's not going to cost as much as it says, and C, trying to alleviate their fears about the federal government going back on their promise. But again, we've talked about this before. We talked about it on TV. A lot of this is philosophical.
And, exactly.
And the philosophical argument is going to be harder to breach.
Yeah, because I think they are using the financial argument to try to make the case to the general public in the middle, saying why we shouldn't do it. But a lot of this is philosophical. I mean, the belief that the free market, not government, should be the main player in the healthcare industry and the healthcare providing health care and providing health care insurance.
Well, I'd be remiss to not bring up this topic as a person who spent 6 months of his life on this topic. But the governor made, what, his fourth or fifth plea to the legislature to put campaign finance limits on political donations. He even said he would use all of his power to put it on the ballot if the legislature didn't act. Joe, I think I heard you on Don Marsh's show talking about this. What was kind of your impression of that?
Well, I mean, he may or may not be serious about it. I take him at his word that he is. But just because of timing, it means that if he's pressing to get it on the ballot, he's really only has two opportunities. 2014, when arguably there won't be as sympathetic an audience on the ballot. If you go to previous years, when it's an off-year election, Republicans tend to be more likely to turn out than Democrats, because it's not like it's not a presidential election year. Governor's not going to be on the ballot. Most of the statewide offices won't be on the ballot, so turnout will be down. So he either tries doing it in 2014 and trying to whip up enough interest in this, or he waits 2016. Well, if he waits 2016, that's basically his swan song on the way out, because he won't be running for governor. He may be running for something else.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. But So he only has two opportunities over the next 4 years to get it on the ballot. So that it doesn't mean it's going to happen tomorrow, because he is trying to get the General Assembly to act on it.
Which they won't.
Yeah, probably not. And this reminds me, again, this is before you guys were born. Well, in this case, not, but you were little kids. In the early 1990s, when this first came up, mm-hmm. Mel Carnahan pressed a similar case. He was then the newly elected governor of the General Assembly. At that point, the General Assembly were Democrats. Mm-hmm. And an interesting point is some of the major drivers of getting campaign donation limits were Republicans. And among the leaders of a coalition that was set up was Roy Blunt, mm-hmm. who was a leader of this effort to try to get some sort of campaign donation limits. The legislature did approve some limits because they were concerned about this initiative petition drive that was going on. Then another initiative petition drive came on and actually got approved lower limits. And then that started years of legal wrangling over which limits would be in place. And I was in the audience when Jay Nixon defended the state's limits. Both of them were being challenged by various groups before the U.S. Supreme Court in Washington, D.C.
I got to broach this question before we go to the next topic. I mean, there's been talk about how Nixon took a lot of big donations, and there's been talk about the practicality of whether this is going to happen. But I think I just have to ask an obvious question. Do limits actually work? I mean, like when you look at the federal system now, there are very strict limits. But there are these super PACs where people are giving $1 million, yeah. and they're still doing exactly the same thing as the other things are. Well, I know there's this perception idea, but are we really just doing a feel-good thing and making it harder? I mean, I don't have an opinion on this, but I do want to just throw this out there.
Chris, go ahead.
Super PACs were a lot less influential in the 2012 election in Missouri than they were in other states because, you know, we don't have campaign finance limits. So, you know, if some millionaire wants to give a candidate a lot of money, they don't have to use the workaround of, you know, doing an advocacy or an issue ad. They can just give it directly to the candidate.
Yeah, but most of the super PACs are frankly have been set up for national and congressional
right.
elections, so they don't really care about who's running for governor.
But I'm just saying, wouldn't that occur on the state level if there were campaign finance limits again? You kind of saw that when there were before they were thrown out.
Well, here's some differences. These super PACs only came about after Citizens United, mm-hmm. after that Supreme Court decision in 2010. Before that, you did have outside groups, but they were under much more stricter guidelines, and mm-hmm, you couldn't right. have all these anonymous huge donations, and there were still some restrictions. I mean, the federal restrictions do put a cap on how much overall someone can put in, but that's into existing groups, not these super PACs, so they can – Now, when Missouri had campaign donation limits, while there was concern about these committee-to-committee transfers, because the limits were also on a lot of these lower-level committees, the result was that even if you aggregated some of these donations, I mean, the donation limits were roughly, you know, about $1,100 for governor, for example. It still wouldn't approach anything like the 100,000 or 150,000 that the governor and his opponent, Dave Spence, took from some groups. So right. you didn't have that. And you, because the state law was set up in such a way that you didn't. So you could have outside independent spending, but again, it can't be coordinated.
Yeah.
And so on the state level,
technically, it can't be coordinated.
Yeah, technically. But yeah. But the point is during the we had limits for close to 20 years and you didn't have. Well, I'm sorry. It was by 15 years. Apologize. But the bottom line is that you didn't see that you weren't seeing that. You did see a little bit, but nothing massive of what you saw in the presidential election in 2012, or that were starting to loom in some of the Senate races in 2010 when there was a lot of major spending spent against Robin Carnahan. But that was generally by identifiable PACs, the National Chamber of Commerce and some others that really came out hard against
Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm just I mean, again, I didn't ask that question to say that one system was better or the other, but I do think that if there are campaign finance limits, it's going to be exactly like the federal system. I mean, it's other states have shown it that way.
But what's interesting is the reason that campaign finance limits came about in Missouri originally is because there was some concern, for example, the gaming industry, casinos had just begun opening a year or two before.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some candidates, including a candidate for governor, then Mayor Vince Schemel, who had taken up to $30,000 from one of the big casino magnates.
And now I guess in St. Louis City, if you're a city candidate, you can't take casino donations
anymore. Because they put a restriction in city ordinance. But the bottom line there was some concern about these donations. And also there was a candidate for state treasurer who did receive like around $300,000 from an outstate donor. And I remember Bob Holden, who was then their Democrat for state treasurer, was bringing it up. And this was, as again, before campaign donation limits came into effect. So there was concern about – so there was some concern about this. And also because you had some major corporate players at the time that aren't now, the biggest player, frankly, was Anheuser-Busch 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And after the – after candidate filing, this is me as a young reporter – I remember the day after candidate filing, what you used to do was go down to Anheuser-Busch and stand outside and watch the line. There would be a line of people who had just filed for office who were waiting their turn to go in to talk to certain corporate officials who had been set up to handle their requests for money. I mean, this was this is the way it was back then. So there were many corporations at the time who were pleased – to get these limits because it got rid of that, you know. So anyway, it'd be interesting to see what happens.
Well, since we're on the topic of campaign finance, in the mayoral race, both candidates, two out of the three candidates filed their campaign finance reports. Incumbent Mayor Francis Slay spent nearly $1 million in the month of January. And his opponent, President of the Board of Aldermen, Lewis Reed, for December and January, he spent a little over $77,000. So he's getting outspent by a lot.
Not surprising.
Well, and a lot of the mayor's money was to front load spending for TV and radio ads and presumably flyers. So the assumption is, and this is just in the city, so he should be blanketing the airwaves pretty shortly.
I'm sure that Jeffco will see these ads too. So
yeah, he started his TV campaign with KMOV, I think is where he's already gotten some airtime for.
It's
some
all
of
about
his
lead paint and how kids aren't getting
this old
poisoned
house. This old
anymore.
House. So he spent $500,000 to a DC firm for reserving TV and radio time,
right,
and $300,000 to a firm I think in Texas that is that deals with mailers.
Mm-hmm.
Because mailers have become a major part of campaigns in Missouri, especially in
St. Louis. Because when you're talking about races, especially in the St. Louis metro area, unless you're running for mayor or county executive, you can't really go on TV or radio because it's just massively inefficient. And this is kind of a more direct way, even for a mayor. I mean, Slay has so much money he can afford to basically do both right now,
yeah,
right?
Well, yeah. And he's probably – I mean, I don't know exactly where all he's airing, but often candidates do a lot of cable because that's cheaper, and they can have that targeted.
Hmm.
So if you put ads on cable, you can have it targeted, so it's just in certain parts of their viewership area. So it's not quite as – there isn't as much collateral the way it is, like if you're one of the broadcast stations, like Channel 5 or Channel 4, where you got all these people in the county, and on the east side who are seeing your ads.
And then that following weekend, Reed did post. He disclosed $45,001 in donations, which you have to disclose any donations that are greater than $5,000. And one of his donations was $5,001, which is pretty much saying, we would like people to know that we are getting money.
Yeah, I mean, I figured Reed isn't saying, but I'm assuming that he asked him to give him the extra $1
extra dollar,
so it'd show up in the report, because some of this is not just a message to supporters, it's a message to other potential donors.
Yeah.
Because it's like anything else, if you're not raising money, then they're like, why should we give money?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So but, if he's getting some money, then they might reconsider.
But the big news was there was a feisty debate at the beautiful new library, which, again, I was too lazy to go to, but I think both of you were there. So
yes,
what were your impressions
we were.
About that?
Well, it was crowded. In fact, I was very lucky.
Packed.
Even though I got there early, I was lucky to get in the main hall. And
there was an overflow room that was full.
And then
there was an overflow room.
Well, that has to be nice that people care that much.
Yeah,
it does bode well for turnout.
The League of Women Voters, who were the moderators, estimated there was at least around 450 people there.
Yeah.
And that's
about right, I would say.
And that's a pretty good crowd for a forum. And it's not like it was publicized everywhere.
No, it wasn't.
So
it really
people
was not
really,
publicized
and
at all.
It was a really rainy night. Mm-hmm. But it ended up just being the Democratic candidates, because Jim McNeely, the Green Party candidate, did not participate, although he'd been asked. Mm-hmm. So it was Slay, Reed, and former
Jimmy
Alderman
Matthews.
Jimmy Matthews, who provided some pithy comedy relief at times. That was not his intent, but
yeah,
he did cut the tension a few times.
Yeah.
And
do you think he has any impact on this race at all?
He could have. I mean, I never want to say somebody's not going to win
because he ran against Chris Carter and got like 10% of the vote against him recently. But
in a close race,
there's some feeling that he could take away votes from Reed, possibly, because he's from. Where is he from?
He's from 27th Ward.
Yeah, that's obviously. So, I mean, that's one thought. But I don't know if he's not raising any money and people don't know who he is.
And see, I think that's one of the reasons Reed has been pressing for forums or debates that are just him and the mayor. He doesn't want Matthews there. And frankly, this is reminiscent of the Nixon-Dave Spence thing, where Dave Spence didn't want any other challenger because they wanted to have it head-to-head. But yeah, I think that the mayor was a little nervous in the beginning, then seemed to settle down a bit. Reed was interrupting him at the beginning until the League of Women Voters told him to not do that.
Mm-hmm.
Reed told me afterwards that they were talking about crime. They were discussing crime.
Which was
crime,
the most contentious issue.
And Reed told me afterwards that it was because that he feels very strongly and somewhat emotionally about it. He said that he had a brother who was murdered in the 1980s, not in St. Louis, somewhere else, he said. But he said that he has a very emotional concern about that. But they covered a lot of ground. I mean, it wasn't just about crime.
Right.
It was on other issues and even the fight over the city water department.
Seems relatively substantive as far as issues go. Is that a fair assessment?
They covered substantive issues for sure.
Yes, they did. And I thought the league did a really good job of – because they said that they had gotten over 300 questions from people.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to combine them into topics.
Yeah.
So they would group them. And so they did talk about city-county merger.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting in that Reed is somewhat cool on it. Matthews is opposed to it. Slay is definitely it's not for a merger. The mayor wants the city to re-enter the county as a municipality.
What Reed told me yesterday, and I interviewed him, was, and you probably heard this too, was it's not that Reed is necessarily against collaboration, but he's realistic about the prospects of St. Louis County voters accepting that they have to – the city has to do things before they take that step, which when you think about it logically, even if you agree with the mayor that we should join as a county, is probably, I don't know, is that the out? You think it's likely the city would join with the county anytime soon?
Well, I don't know. The mayor says that that's going to be one of his objectives mm-hmm. if he gets reelected over the next 4 years to try to pursue that. I think it feels like he has a sympathetic partner in St. Louis County Executive Charlie Dooley.
I think so too.
But Reed brings up some good points. Will county voters
accept
that? I mean, the city pulled itself out of the county in 1876 because it didn't want to pay for all those rural people out there.
And now guess who's laughing?
Yeah.
County.
And it's been a headache. ever since, and it's something that probably, I'm sure.
I mean, just look at the. I've said this before, but Charlie Dooley has a lot more power over stuff than Mayor Slay has, just the way that it's functioned, and it's probably because the county has more people, it has more money to spend, and just the way it's structured differently.
But also, I think though the mayor has echoed the complaints of previous mayors going back 50 years that. Because of this setup, St. Louis City is a county in and of itself. Mm. So it has a lot of these special offices like Recorder of Deeds, collector of revenue.
I would imagine if they joined, then maybe the mayor would become more powerful then.
Well, because those county offices, quote unquote, would in theory go away.
Yeah.
That they would then be if the city is a municipality, it'd be under the county, and so the county people holding those offices, which are generally appointed because of the way the county set up its charter about 30 years ago, so that they would be covered under that. Now, you've had some critics of this. This came up when Charlie Dooley ran for re-election
in 2010. Yeah,
because Bill Corrigan, the Republican, was challenging this because he was claiming that the city would bring a lot of debt in with it. I mean, now Dooley and the mayor deny it, but still, it did become an issue, and Corrigan saw this as a way of possibly defeating Dooley.
It would be impactful. I don't know if that is true, but I do think it would force the county to direct more resources toward the city, just because there'd be three or four people who would have to join the council then. I would imagine
they would have to figure out how to restructure the council, and there probably would have to be some sort of financial arrangement. I mean, in fairness. I mean, Florissant pays its own bills. Kirkwood pays its own bills.
Exactly.
They could set it up where, I mean, the city covers its own bills.
Yeah.
But it would definitely be the largest municipality in the county.
So we've covered a lot of ground today.
Yes, we have. Well, if you're interested in campaign finance for this race, I have an infographic. It's stlpublicradio.org.
Very good one.
Very good.
Thank you. And Joe has also written about the $45,000 that Reed received over the weekend, with 35 of it being from New Orleans.
Yes. Yeah. He did a trip to New Orleans, Reed did, late last week in a quest for money.
So you can check that out at stlbeacon.org. You can follow me on Twitter at CS McDaniel. You can follow Jason on Twitter.
J Rosenbaum.
And Joe at
J Manis, JMANNIES.
And we'll be back next week with more stories. Until then, so long.
So long.